bar in New York City, Mutual Radio presents The Larry King Show, featuring guests from around the world and calls from all across America. And now, Network Radio's favorite interviewer, Larry King.
Thank you very much, Fred Lowery, and good evening, everybody. Our second night in New York City from the studios of WOR. Our special guest tonight, in my opinion, one of the great actors in this country, David Dukes. He currently stars in Amadeus on Broadway. He also stars in the current motion picture Without a Trace and was seen recently in Winds of War. We will then meet the City Council President of the City of New York, Carol Bellamy. We got a whole bunch of people to thank. We'll take care of all that later. It's great to be home in New York. We grew up here, and it's always nice to come back to these wonderful studios and the wonderful people at WOR. And it's great to welcome to our microphones, in my opinion, one of the great actors, David Dukes. Does that bug you?
What's that?
So many of your peers hold you in esteem, and you've won so many awards, and actors talk about you, yet you're not a household name.
No, it doesn't bother me. No, because I have no particular desire to be a star. I mean, the friends of mine who have that stardom thing, I don't want that lifestyle. There's that thing of you can't go to a restaurant, you know, I mean, and that kind of thing. I don't necessarily want that. The only value to all that stardom thing in my book is that you get offered Amadeus first instead of the replacement. You get, you know, you get bigger parts with better people. And that's the only reason I would ever want any of that kind of notoriety. At the moment, I'm very happy. I mean, my career is built very nicely. I'm very happy, really, that my career didn't skyrocket, you know, a la Saturday Night Fever, any of those kind of trips, that it's taken 15 years to get here, because I've got, you know, about 100 plays and 40 television shows and 5 features, and I'm now an experienced professional as opposed to just a star. And I think that's much more important, because hopefully I can sustain it in the end.
Isn't part of acting for fame, though? Don't you want to be recognized for what you do?
Yes and no. I mean, you want your audience to appreciate your work, and you want them, but what you really want is that whatever the story is you're telling, whether it's Winds of War, whether it's Amadeus, you want them to get that story, and you have a responsibility within the story. I mean, you're either the violin or the trumpet in the story, you're the blue, the red, you're the protagonist, the antagonist. You have a job to fulfill, and you do your part of the story, and that when it really works, I mean, when Amadeus really works, and it's a part like no other, and it is your story, it's your character's story, and it's a reminiscence, so he brings back everything that happens in the play. And when you tell that whole story, and you tell it funny and tragic, so that you get the tears and all the laughs that are in that show, there's nothing more gratifying than the audience just sort of sitting there at the end and sort of with glazed eyes.
But you don't need them waiting by the...
No, I don't necessarily like the stuff at the stage door. I mean, it's always very nice, and it's flattering, yes. But, I mean, remember when I did Bent with Richard Gere?
I saw that. You were magnificent.
Oh, thank you. But I remember, you know, American Gigolo came out just at that time. Well, he had, I mean, there'd be 300 hysterical, you know, 17-year-olds at the stage door. And I knew right there, I didn't want to come out the stage door and do that, because that's no fun somehow. Suddenly your life is no fun to do that.
You are, I don't want to use the word in danger, because you're about to become, though, a character actor.
Well,
you play,
yeah,
Diverse roles. I mean, you play the berserk killer in The First Deadly Sin with Sinatra. You play a limpid bureaucrat in The Winds of War.
Mm.
You play a strong and unbelievable Solari in Amadeus, a distraught husband in Without a Trace. You're a homosexual in Germany in Bent.
Mm.
And the business tends to type. And you fear they're going to say, well, Dukes can do anything. And therefore you're going to become the character actor,
yeah,
the third star in everything.
But, you know, that wouldn't really bother me. Yes, that may happen, and who really knows. I like to think I can do all the, you know, the leading man stuff, too. But if that happens, if I end up being a third star for all my life, it doesn't really bother me, as long as I get to do, you know, parts all of, without a trace or parts as nice as Winds of War. It doesn't really bother me. Yes, you want to get the chance at, you know, at the leading part, but you, it's not a burning desire to do that. I love it when people... It seems to me that the value of any of these mediums is that people will suddenly look at the world differently. They'll look at whatever they ask. Remember, I did a movie the week about a quadriplegic, and the people I've talked to who saw that, suddenly they don't look at quadriplegics the same way ever again. Their perception is changed, and that seems to me that is the value of any of these mediums. It, your perception of the world has changed somehow. And when that happens, I mean, it's so exciting that you don't need the fame. And the fact that I changed my look and, you know, and hopefully, you know, essence and all that nonsense, that I changed slightly from it. And if I don't get to that John Travolta stardom, it doesn't really bother me as long as I keep working. I mean, I really want to die on stage at 84, you know, doing, you know, the Imaginary Invalid. I mean, I could die like Molière. Is what
I want David Dukes in a minute to take me to the stage and what goes through an actor's mind. David Dukes, he stars in Amadeus on Broadway in the current film Without a Trace and was recently featured in Winds of War. It was the unbelievably viewed special, which ran forever on
hours
ABC.
And, hours
and has been said, David actually understood his role. Ali's in Japan, so it doesn't matter. We'll be back with David Dukes following these messages.
You're listening to The Larry King Show, broadcasting from the studios of WOR in New York City. Portions of this program are played back in the Pacific Time Zone.
My guest is David Dukes. He stars on Broadway in Amadeus. He recently was featured in Winds of War, is starring in Without a Trace, which is currently playing all over America, has appeared in such films as A Little Romance, The Wild Party, The First Deadly Sin with Frank Sinatra, played Horstin Bent, Count Dracula in the revival of Dracula, was in that famed one-night show, Frankenstein, which got to be
a monstrous production,
wildest experiences in the history of Broadway. What is it? How much are you into what you are doing? With that, I mean, when you're on stage and you're Salati, all right, and it's Amadeus, and then are you David Dukes, or are you him, or is it a little bit of both? Can you do a scene and think, I've got to do the Larry King Show tonight at midnight while I'm talking and doing the scene? Can you do that?
No, not really. It's funny. I mean, it also changes, especially in a play, it changes from night to night. But the concentration becomes so intense. I mean, what I like to do is invent the series of thoughts that the character goes through for a given scene so that...
The thoughts.
Yes, the thoughts that he's going through. It's not just the words he's saying, the thoughts that cause the words. And so that when you're meeting Mozart for the first time, what I like to do is set up a series of thoughts or expectations in my head so that the first line I deliver to Mozart, I expect him to respond a certain way, and he doesn't respond that way because I happen to know the script, so I know he won't. So I set it up to where I'm surprised in some way by what he does, which somehow causes my next line, and I have an expectation on that, which he doesn't fulfill, which he does something back to me, which causes my next line, which causes... And so that the event of the scene will just happen. And if you set that up in rehearsal well enough, it will just happen so that you can come in on a night with 101 temperature or just bored. It's a Sunday matinee, and you'd just as soon not be there. But if you'll just go through the series of thoughts before your first entrance or before your first line, and if you really do it, and you do whatever your first line is, and hope that he will laugh, or he will cry, or he will be shocked, and then he's not, and if you really take that in, and just really watch him and listen to him, generally this scene happens. And what can happen, and it happened, used to happen in Bent a lot, it happens in Amadeus a lot too, it's not so much I think I become Salieri, is that I get caught up in this series of give and takes. And if you really listen to him, especially if he changes, I mean, if John Pankow changes from night to night, something he does as Mozart, I mean, suddenly, I mean, all my... And I just am totally concentrated on him. And there's a period of time to where, you know, I'm just totally concentrated on what's going on between us. Now, I must tell you, at the same time this is happening, there's a second ear or a part of your mind that's listening to the audience because it's
a
comedy.
You're aware they're there.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think as an actor, especially a stage actor, you never... forget you're doing it for somebody. You're not doing this. See, I think when method acting goes wrong, it becomes masturbation because it becomes everything that I feel and I want and I do. Well, that's not important. We're telling a story. We're telling it for somebody. Now, you have to go through it and you have to make it real and believable, and the method is a technique to do that. But you're an illusionist. You ultimately create illusion.
And you also are playing for the last row, too.
Yes, right? And you're also talking for somebody who's sitting 55 feet away. I mean, at the Broadhurst, if you're playing the Amundsen, you're talking for somebody who's sitting 103 feet away. If you're playing the Amundsen Theater in L.A. So, I mean, and you're always aware. I mean, a house that big, it's a big thing you're doing. So you've got to do it for 103 feet away. I never forget that.
What about the transition when you do film?
That's something I keep learning. I remember when I first came to film and took the camera, I kept thinking, all right, this is a new proscenium arch. The proscenium arch is just my head, a la close-up. Or the proscenium arch is big enough for, down to my waist for me. I kept trying to think it was that, and so I'm just acting with this part, and I'm telling my story with this part. But there's something peculiar that happens with the camera that is sort of magical. I don't know if I can necessarily explain it. But on a close-up in film, because a close-up comes in, and then when you put it on screen, it magnifies. There's suddenly a 40-foot head up there with a 6-inch pimple, in it. And it does read your thoughts, because it magnifies your face, and suddenly you're examining somebody. And what happens in film acting is your motivation is more important than your action. So whatever, like what I talked about before, about what I'm doing to John, that's very important on stage, because stage is the tension between two actors, what's going to happen, what may happen, and your reaction to that. But it's what happens between two people. On film, with a close-up, your motivation, I mean, what you're thinking, why, and the moment of decision, the moment of realization, those are the moments that are film. All the great moments of film is when suddenly the close-up comes in, and the man suddenly realizes his wife has betrayed him, or that he's going to kill this man, or he's going about to die. I mean, that moment of realization and decision to fight, to give in, to whatever, those are the great moments in film. And that, so it's a whole different thing. Your motivation's more important. So those thoughts that you go through become vital. That's why personalities, a la Frank Sinatra, work very well on film, because they just go through it. They don't act per se. See, I think Mitchum in Winds of War, he's a very underrated actor, by himself too, I think, because I don't know whether he really underrates himself, but he doesn't talk about it.
He puts it down a lot.
Yeah, he puts it down a lot. But I mean, playing those scenes with him, this is a man who suddenly looks at you, and suddenly there's somebody really looking at you. And he's looking at you, and the way he looks at you from scene to scene, in one scene he'll look at you in some way, and it causes you to, you get nervous, and you have to justify yourself, because he's scrutinizing, and suddenly you find you're justifying. In another scene, he's looking at you, and he's enjoying. And so you find yourself being expansive and going on. He's a very good actor, because he just does it. Whatever the scene is, that's all he does. He doesn't act it, he doesn't invent, he just does it.
What do you do with regard to exploration of a role? Let's say you're going to play a homosexual. Bent, and you're not a homosexual.
What do you do
to be a homosexual?
Well, I mean, we've all known, I don't know if we all know, but I've certainly known a lot. I mean, being in the theater, I mean, we've known a lot of homosexuals. It's also, ultimately, you have to read the story. I mean, whatever the playwright's, your screenwriter's, in this case, the playwright's intention is. And in Bent, this was a guy, I mean, the story is Richard Gere's story, and at this point in the story, he meets a wonderful person. And what this character, what Richard Gere's character has to learn is, he's a little into leather and chains and stuff. And at this point, he has to learn affection. He has to learn that, love or being human is more important than all the sex thing. And he meets this wonderful guy. And so you suddenly realize your job is to be a wonderful guy. And you just have to sort of examine the demands of what it is you have to do, because you ultimately have to cause another character to do something. So I always like to read the script and figure out what I have to do to make the scene work, because Richard has to go through a change, so I have to affect that change. So then I have to invent a character that does that. And in that case, because we were in 1934 to 36 Germany, I did a lot of research. I mean, I always do a lot of historical research if it's a historical piece. And if there's somebody real, a la Salieri and Mozart, I'll do a lot of research for that. For this one, I found out the camps, and the persecution of homosexuals at that time, and up until 36, it was a very severe persecution of homosexuals. And then just trying to invent a character that is... it seemed to me that what was important is that he's a guy that we all like. And I've known a lot of homosexuals. You wouldn't know they were homosexual or not. Yeah. But it's... they're wonderful people. Their sexual preference doesn't really matter because they're wonderful people. And their sex was not... their sexual preference was not important. And that seems... that what was important about that character to me. That he was just... a loving human being. He was a wonderful human being. Inventing that's another game, but...
how do you research a psychotic killer for the first deadly sin?
Well, that was very ugly research because I just started reading... he was a mass murderer, so I read 20 case histories of mass murderers. The New York Police Department had, you know, this research material. And, I mean, I thought doing the research of what went on in Dachau and the persecution of all that and imagining what it was like to be in Dachau was hard. But reading 20 case histories and imagining... what it's like to be 35, having been abused as a child, I mean, trying to imagine what had gone through for that character was extreme. And reading those 20 case histories of what these people went through to get to the point of where they murdered randomly. And it was, it's just astounding. And then it's a process of imagination, because it really, acting, I mean, I think Brando used to say it, is we all act, and it's just play pretend. You know, it's just suddenly you're dealing with your mother, so... you deal with your mother in one way, you deal with your father another way, you deal with your mistress one way, you deal with your wife another way.
Why do you love it so much? It has been said that it's Anthony Quinn told me once that you're really being a child again, aren't you? There's no bad 8-year-old actor. When an 8-year-old plays cops and robbers, he falls. No man ever falls like an 8-year-old falls because he doesn't think he's going to die.
No.
And he goes right down, man.
Yeah.
He breaks the ankle. He goes down.
Yeah.
And you're being a child again, aren't you?
Yeah, there's a great deal of thing. I mean, every now and again I think about, you know, this is not a respectful profession. I mean, I remember that when I was in rep, there was an actor and he was doing some bizarre play and he had to go home to his 3 kids at night and he was doing something and his kids would say, well, what would you do today? And he said, he had to sort of go back over what he'd been rehearsing today. And it's too long a story to explain what he had to do, but it, bizarre things this man was going through. And not adult things. I mean, not, you know, not making money at the stock market or any, or digging a ditch. It was just bizarre things. You suddenly realize this is a bizarre existence. And it is like, you know, play pretend. It's like being a kid again. But it really comes down to why tell stories. I mean, sometimes you tell a story to just get somebody to laugh and enjoy the passage of time, just to enjoy. And then sometimes you tell a story so that, you know, the world changes slightly. You either reveal Salieri and Mozart. You tell Mozart's story from Salieri's point of view. So you do something that's historically relevant. But you also tell a story about what it's like to be mediocre and be confronted with genius. And to suddenly recognize that you are mediocre and this is genius. And this man personally is a schmuck. I mean, this guy is a mess. But he writes the most amazing music the world has ever seen. And you can recognize, nobody else around you recognizes it, but you recognize it, and you recognize how inferior you are. And to tell that story, because we've all recognized aspects of that of ourselves, and this happens to be a story of a man to whom that fact, it drove him to murder, or drove him to contributing to murder. He hurt Mozart. But to tell that story suddenly, when it works, I mean, suddenly it's a vision of the world. It's a vision of jealousy and the anger at the unfairness of the world that I think changes our perceptions.
You have to like the character?
You have to understand the character. I don't know if you have to like him. I mean, ultimately, you have to understand him. There have been a lot of characters that I haven't liked. I don't think I necessarily like Salieri, but I certainly understand him. And I think, ultimately, when you play him, you have to justify his point of view. So you have to like him in that sense.
Do you like doing Winds of War?
I love doing Winds of War. It was a very frustrating project because we had to do it so fast. So it was very hard to, you know, do 9-12 pages of spectacle a day, you know, of the German army invading Poland, and in the midst of which you've got your own little love story going on. So that was very hard. Television is always hard because television to me is like deadline work. It's like you've got to do
it. Get it right, get it done.
Yeah, exactly. Get it done. And you've got to do it on the first or second take because there's no time to go to, you know, seventh take, you know, like a film where you can try and make it right. It's just got to be done by Tuesday. That's
Did
it.
You have any idea it would be as huge as it was?
Well, I mean, we all hope, but no, you never really know. I mean, you know, ABC, you know, all through the shooting, oh, this is wonderful. This, but I've been in so many projects where everyone says, oh, this is wonderful, and nobody watches, or it closes in 1 week. Or
Did you like doing 79 Park Avenue?
I had a great time with that. That was my first miniseries.
You were terrific. We're going to pause for news headlines, a word from your local stations. If you'd like to talk to David Dukes, we'll go to calls in about 10 minutes. Personally, I'd rather just talk to him. So don't call. But that's part of the show.